remind ourselves what the skeleton does. It does move things principally, mechanically. All our muscles attach. That's why we can stand upright, walk upright. Animals have muscles and bones too, but we can locomote because our muscles have something strong to attach to. We protect our brain. We have a reservoir of calcium and phosphate on very important atoms in biology. If you need them, we have a big reservoir of them in our skeleton. Okay, so let's go into more detail now. Okay, let's dive into, that was big picture stuff. I want you to understand it enough so you know diseases a little bit, in case you or somebody has these diseases or you want to think about them for whatever reason. Let's go a little bit more detail into the cell. There are four bone cells. Let's start with bone. There are four bone cell types. Okay, and the names are there. Osteo, os, bone. Flat means building bone. Site means living in bone. Bone lining cell means living at the surface of the bone. And then, importantly, there's this big giant cell that comes and resorbs your bone. Resorbs your bone. Why do we want to resorb your bone? Well, the beauty of being organisms is that we turn our body parts over. Our skin is never the same a few months later. Our bones, on the average, turn themselves over every 10 years. We have a brand new skeleton. Can you imagine that? Teacher. Puzzle. You're removed. If you're a tennis player and use your right hand and not your left hand, left arm, your right arm turns over faster and replaces that bone. Okay? So it's not static. It's constantly healing, rehealing itself. And yes, it slows down with age, unfortunately. Okay, so how do we build a bone? Well, we're in our connective tissue. We're an embryo floating in our mother's amniotic fluid in the fetus. We gather our cells together, they cluster into a cell mass like this. They divide and proliferate like any cell would do. But importantly, they gather as a cluster and they start secreting collagen on one side into the middle of this circle of cells. It's not a circle, it's a sphere in three dimensions. The skin cell puts collagen all around it. The bone cell targets it into a central space. This happens at hundreds of thousands of locations over the body, trapping the blood vessels in between, which is a good thing. And these will all fuse together, and eventually, if you look and zoom right in here, you have little individual tiny tablets of bone made by these guys, hundreds of thousands of these. They'll fuse together, and you'll eventually get a nice, strong, hard bone. But you've got to start somewhere, and you're smart with those, start with those small packages of bone. This is a real human fetus in the formation phase. Look how porous the skull is. It's just starting. But eventually, it's going to become nice and solid. And eventually, in an adult, you get something that looks like this. You'll notice that some parts of the bone are very dense and compact, like the shaft, the outer part of our bones. The inner part of our bone has something called spongy or cancellous bone, which is very porous. And you need it to be porous. This is where the bone marrow is kept. All right? So you can imagine the more you fill in that sponge with more and more bone, you can end up with a compact bone or a very loose, porous bone. And that's exactly what happens in different anatomical regions of a bone. And you can imagine the more connections you have, the stronger your bones would be. So you have an outer shaft, but like the suspension cables on the Jacques Cartier bridge, you have additional support of bone connecting everything together. And some of this bone is lost in diseases, and we'll come back to that. So you're a bone, and a bone cell, an osteoblast. You made bone, but guess what? Some of you have this horrible fate that you're going to be trapped in the cell, in the bone. So some bone cells that made the bone are actually trapped right here. And they become embedded, and you can see in this animation, they come embedded in your bone. So actually, the embedded type of cell is the predominant bone cell you have in your bodies as adults. When you're in the fetus, you're making bones so much that you have mostly those bone-forming cells. But you've made your skeleton already, and the major cell type you have is these embedded bone cells right here. And just like a neuronal network, just like the connections in our neural system, our nervous system, those bone cells are telling the surface of the bone the status of your bone, whether you're an athlete, whether you had a car accident and smashed and cracked the bone. What would you imagine if you put a crack in your bone? Right here, boom, you had a big crack, a fracture, or a small crack. Well, these cell processes would feel it, sense it, they might even get broken, but they're all connected with their neighbors, and they start sending signals through their neighbors to the surface of the bone that you've got a problem inside the bone. And by the way, it's very normal for your bones to be breaking. Okay? There's a traumatic break, but there's a normal break, and the normal break is called microfractures, microcracks. We have hundreds of thousands of microcracks in our bone. It's part of the normal use process. Like an airplane wing, our bones are a composite material, not epoxy resins and steel or aluminum, but collagen cables and mineral. And it flexes like an airplane wing flexes, and it gets microfractures. And the technician goes out with his ultraviolet light and looks at for microcracks in the airplane wing. We don't do that, but we know that we have them. And I'll show you some microcracks in a minute. So we need to clear out the bone that has these accumulated microcracks and put new bone there, new, fresh, healthy bone. That's why we have the bone resorbing cell to get rid of those microcracks, and then you're going to fill it up again. You're going to plaster it. But these are the cells that sense that something's gone wrong in your bone and tell to fix it. So look at them. They're just gorgeous. They're like spiders here, a colony of spiders. We've digested away the mineral and the collagen, so you see just the cells. Well, I didn't. This group did it. You see all the cells over here with their long cell processes. And here's an electron microscope, very high magnification view of one cell with its cell processes coming out in a fracture open a piece of bone like this and look at it. That's what you see. Okay, so look at all that matrix. You don't really see the crystals yet, but you see the cells in there, and they're just gorgeous. So those are the osteocytes, and we call that a mechanosensory network. Here's the resorbing guy. This is the Pac-Man. This is the hungry big cell that wants to munch away on your bones and get rid of those microcracks, and that's what it does. And they're giant cells. They have lots of nuclei in them. They work in teams. They come like big amoebas. They have a suction cup apparatus, essentially. And they come on the surface of the bone when they're told about a signal. And then they start dissolving your bone. They dissolve your bone with acid. They lower the pH. Why would they do that? Because they have to dissolve crystals. Crystals dissolve in acid. They can make acid, these cells. That's gross, but they do. They make enzymes, too, which dissolve away your collagen. So you've got to get rid of the bone that has microfractures. So you've got to dissolve the minerals, and you've got to digest the collagen, and enzymes do that. Okay? And there you go. They start eating away into the bone. Here is a bone cell that I put on a slice of, this happens to be a tooth, a slice of tooth. And look, like a big amoeba, it will migrate around for a while, then it will round up, and it will start eating right into that slice of tooth. That's quite amazing. In biology, in the skeleton, whole teams, these big pink cells are teams of osteoclasts. They're happily munching away on this green bone. These are the osteocytes trapped in the bone, and they leave these little pits on there. So they're excavating out your bone. But rest assured, you need to fill up those little pits, or pretty soon you're not going to have a skeleton at all, and we'll talk about that. So here's a movie, a video. Here's an osteoclast right here, a big cell. It's put on a surface. We know some of the molecules that attract these cells to the micro-damaged places in your bone. So we leak out, and this is Dr. Komarova in our dental school. She's leaking out one of these molecules from a glass pipette, and watch what happens to this big osteoclast in the corner. Ah, that's nice perfume. Loves it. And just goes right over to the micropipette. So that's how you bring in cells, signaling molecules, they're proteins, and you tell a cell, we've got a microcrack in our bone. We need to excavate it out. And that's what these osteoclasts do. Another reason we have osteoclasts, think that when you're growing in the fetus, right, your brain is growing too, not just your bones, everything's growing, right? Your brain is getting bigger and bigger, it's being made. And your bone is trying to be made at the same time. Everything's trying to be made at the same time. So in a young fetus and then child and adolescent, of course, you have to expand your bones, your brain case, your cranial vault, because hopefully your brain is expanding too. So you got to build bone on the outside to get bigger skull, right? But your brain's growing on the inside, so you have to resorb from the inside out. So teams, thousands of osteoclasts are enlarging your brain space. But teams of forming cells are at the surface, of course, enlarging your skull case, so you can get both big brain and big bones. And so here we got bone, you're forming it on one side, and there's our osteoclast munching away on the other side so that our brains can grow. These are the microcracks that we have to remove. Look, they're here with the red arrows. All right, so this is a piece of bone. All those black spots are the cells, the osteocytes. These are cracks that you and I have in our bone right now. Here's a fluorescent technique to make them even more visible. Actually, it's a bit out of order. I should have had this slide before, but those are the cracks. So that's another reason. We've got to get rid of cracked bone before it fails, like an airplane wing. We have to grow our brain case. And we have to always be turning over our bones so we have nice, healthy bones. So here's putting it all together. Here's a cycle. Let's say you had a red microcrack in some spongy bone here. The cells come in. They resorb it away. I told you before that that has to be plastered up with some new bone. So the bone-forming cells come in, these blue ones. They lay down some putty, some plaster, and they refill up that resorb. And that cycle goes around and around. And so you've replaced the fracture arrows with nice, new, healthy bone. And this is a normal process, and it goes on all the time. I think in the sake of time, I'm going to skip this one. Now, aging. So let's take spongy bone, let's say inside our vertebrae, or in the middle of our femur, let's say. It's spongy bone. This is normal aging on the top. These are plates of bone, nice and thick. There's holes, that's where the bone marrow, a little bit of fat is. As you get older, this is a 24-year-old, what's happening now? They're getting thinner, the holes are getting bigger, and an 89-year-old has very thin, fragile plates of bone. Okay, and some of the connectivity is being lost even. They're being perforated. You know, if you take out a few cables on the Jacques Cartier Bridge, I don't know if I'd be driving on that bridge anymore. You have to be careful, right? So you're thinning, you're losing connectivity of your bones. And now you know the cells that do that. Okay, so two things could be going on. And then osteoporosis is simply an accelerated version of that. We all lose our bone. We had peak bone mass, 20s and 30s. We're supposed to be active teenagers and McGill University students doing our sports and everything. Build as much bone as we can in a window of opportunity because we're going to lose it later. So you build up as much as you can. And then you lose it normally. And if you have osteoporosis, you lose it too fast. Too fast. So you lose it too fast. Now you know the cell players. You lose it too fast because your osteoclasts are too happy and eating away too much of your bone. They're too active, or they're normal, but the bone cells that are supposed to be plastering and forming the new fresh bone in there are not making enough bone. Either one can be true. And the net result over time, over years, is that you are not replacing bone like you should be or at the normal aging rate. It's accelerated. Too much eating away by osteoclasts or not enough formation. And then what happens is femoral necks fracture in your hip, your vertebral columns crush. A vertebrae should look like this, or an aged vertebrae should look like this, thinner, that's fine. We're all careful when we're older, but they can crush. And imagine your vertebrae crushing like this. What happens in our vertebral columns? Where all nerve trunks are. We crush down on our nerves. Ouch. So, you know the players. I hope you could explain that to someone. Here's a movie. Let's see if it plays. It's got some nice music. Try and put it all together now. Zooming into bone. Here comes the osteoclast. Normal bone. Normal refilling bone by the bone forming cells. Uh-oh, perforation. Little bit of bone formation. another example, loss of connectivity in your suspension bridge. A little bit of fill. You can target the bone's forming cells with certain drugs. Resorption occurs. You target the bone forming cells and stimulate them to make more bone. Or you load your bone with these green drugs to kill the osteoclasts that are eating the bone. They don't like that. It kills them off before they digest too much bone. I hope you could hear me on that. So that was sort of a summary of everything. So there are drugs. We can talk about it at the end. There are these drugs that can be used to stimulate or inhibit the forming or the resorptive pathways, and now you know the cells. Okay, another example. Another example of tooth resorption that's so important. Our teeth fall out, our baby teeth fall out because the roots are resorbed and the bone, our mandibles and our maxilla, makes a hole for the tooth to come out in. That's done by these same resorbing cells. So there are diseases where patients, kids, have defective resorbing cells and their teeth don't erupt. They just choke. They back up in the mandibles. They get infected. You get abscesses. Okay, you need resorption to get your teeth out. And you need resorption to remove the roots of the baby teeth to bring in your adult teeth later in life. Another example of resorption by the osteoclasts, or the tooth class, they should be called. Think about orthodontics, okay? When we bracket a tooth, okay, so before I get there, two principles of bone formation. If you pull on bones, put them in traction, okay, the second line there leads to bone formation. If you put pressure on bones, it leads to bone resorption. So using these principles, okay, an orthodontist will bracket your teeth, he'll tug on your teeth to where he wants them. He's not actually changing tooth structure, they're pulling and tugging and putting pressure on the bones. That's why it hurts when you have braces, to cause pressure on one side and tension on the other side. Tighten those brackets, put some rubber bands on, pressure on one side, tension on the other side, and you can shift and move the teeth around in your jaws, bones, because of the osteoclasts resorbing on one side and the bone cells forming on the other side. Now you know about orthodontics. There's different types of bone surgery procedures where if you have to section the bone, a limb is too short, for example, you cut it, you put in this big retractor apparatus, and very slowly you release a screw and you pull it and you pull it and pull it, and you stimulate the bone-forming cells based on those two sentences, those principles of bone formation. And again, now you know the cells that do that. So what about teeth? So what about the cells of teeth? I actually don't have time to get into this in great detail. I thought bone would better illustrate the example. But teeth, like I said before, have cells that make the tooth enamel. That's these right here. They have the pulp and the cells that make the dentin. These are extracellular matrices. Not enamel, but dentin is full of those collagen fibrils and minerals. Okay, so I want to move on because I want to spend some time about these nanobio rocks. Okay, but same thing, matrix, and things can go wrong. So let's talk about the growth of these biostones, bio rocks, mineral crystals, that's what we call them. They are made of calcium and phosphate. They have a chemistry that has a name. We call it apatite or hydroxyapatite. And there you go. You put together a bunch of calcium atoms and some phosphate and hydroxyl atoms, and you can make these little crystals in the collagen fibrils of your bones and teeth. Now, just take a minute and marvel at more than 60 organisms that we know in biology that cut across phyla, that cut across kingdoms, that make biominerals with proteins. Okay? Otherwise, it's just a rock, a gem that you find on your hike. Oops. Let me show you a few examples. Pearls, oysters, are calcium carbonate minerals formed round because of the actions of biology, of proteins. What else? This is your tooth enamel at very high magnification. These are worms that have mineralized hooks and teeth that they scrape the stones with for food. These are fish that have otoliths that keep them in balance in the water, that sense vibrations. A shark is coming. They feel these little rocks vibrate on those neural cells like we have in our ears. Okay, so sense. There's a million types. Not a million types. There's more than 60 types of biominerals, different combinations of mineral atoms that give you all these beautiful structures. Deep sea brittle stars use calcite, that clear like quartz like material, calcite, to make lenses to focus. And this is the lens of a starfish, a deep sea brittle star in the bottom. Whatever little light they can get, they focus it with mineral lenses like the eyes of a fly. They focus it on neuronal cells to collect that light. It's just beautiful. That's biology. This is the best we can do to even get close to that. These are coccolithophores. These are phytoplankton, algal blooms that live in the oceans. And these plates of mineral, biominerals, are used for buoyancy. They help carry them to the surface because there are cells in there that need photosynthesis. And that's just a buoyancy element in the oceans. Isn't that cool? And we're far away from biomimetically making such wonderful materials. So here's our rock, all right? Here's these biorocks that I said exist in geology, and we think we're so special, but it's humbling to know that all we've done is taken the same stuff you find on the crust of the earth, gems when they're very beautiful and perfect, but just multi-grain type of rocks when they're not. Biology has taken the gem-like stone, the perfect mineral, added gene products, which are proteins, and scaled it down to the billions of nanocrystals that I'm going to talk about, all coming together to make a tooth or coming together to make bone. But we don't know how it does that. So here is a pictorial diagram of what I more or less just said. The genes and the gene products, the proteins, modifying essentially geologic rock, making it a little bit more perfect. This is a gemstone from the Smithsonian Institution, let's say, and making billions of nanorocks in your bones and in your teeth. This is tooth enamel, by the way. This is the white of your teeth zooming in 100,000 times magnification. You're seeing individual gem rocks that are all the same size, shape, all packed in together. All that's controlled by proteins, by gene products. But it's the same mineral that you can find on a hike. It's just there's billions of them. And they all have to be in the right shape. They all have to be in the right size, the right number, the right orientation in your bodies, or you have brittle teeth, or you have brittle bones. Okay, so just one more example. We take a very pure crystal and we scale it down at the atomic level to perfect. So what is a crystal? How do you define a crystal of something? Probably you know, but you haven't thought about it. It means long-range repeating order of atoms. Boom, 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 like that. Okay? So there's no proteins in the crystal, really. But they've somehow resided at the surface and shaped and formed so that every tooth enamel crystal, look, they're identical. Some are a little blacker than others, but they all have the same shape, same orientation, same size. To me, that's astonishing. How do crystals start in the body? To be honest with you, we don't know. We know a lot more about how we control its shape, size, and orientation. We don't know how they start. Obviously, you have to have lots of calcium, you have to have lots of phosphate, you have to eat well. You have to provide the atoms that make a crystal. But we don't know how it starts. But it does start. What we know a bit more, and what I'll you know, kind of come to the end with, is we know about how it's controlled. We know that we take a crystal that started, we don't know how. We know that proteins can bind to its surface, and we know there are different ones, and sometimes they act alone, sometimes they act together, and they shape these crystals. That really is not trivial. Because you know that everyone is going to be the same. If you've got something wrong in the shaping mechanism, something is going to be wrong with each and every one of those billion crystals in your body. And if something is wrong with each and every one of those billions of crystals, you can be sure you're going to have weak bones and teeth. And that's exactly what happens. Okay? And it's controlled by proteins and other small molecules that carefully absorb onto the crystal once it's started, and they watch it, they monitor it, and they grow it very carefully. If they don't grow it very carefully, you're eating a nice, taking your vitamins every morning, minerals, ions, you're getting lots of calcium. You turn like Lot's wife into a chunk of stone. Okay? When she looked back on Sodom being pillaged, right? She turned into stone. Right? That would happen to you if you didn't have a team of proteins living at the surface of your crystals and making sure that they grow properly and not crazy, not too fast even. Right? And that's what the surface of a crystal looks like an escalator. Little building blocks of calcium and phosphate come on the surface, but proteins come in on the surface too. And they control how many of these building blocks and how fast they can be added. So I'm going to show you a little movie here. This is kind of a death case scenario. This is definitely a B-grade movie from 1957. Let me see, how much time I have? Yeah, it's about 10 more minutes, okay. So I'm going to take a few minutes with this movie and then a handful of slides after, and I'm going to be open to your questions. But this is a terrifying, catastrophic scenario where crystals have gone wild. Okay, not in the bodies. You're going to see where they're from. But it's important to know while you're watching this movie, think that you don't have these types of crystals. You have similar crystals, and they're being protected and guarded and controlled as you grow and as you turn over your bone by proteins. They're not being protected by proteins here, and watch what happens. Okay? So basically, let me set the stage. This is clips, not the whole movie. Thank God, you can go out in the sun in a minute. This is just selected scenario. This enemy alien meteorite strikes the Earth and brings with it these foreign crystals. And these crystals grow on the surface of the Earth in 1957. And the scientists, if you can call them that, you'll see why I say that, try and understand how they're growing and what they can do to stop them. Just like me as a scientist is trying to understand how my crystals are growing and what I can do to control them. Because there are bone and tooth diseases that need a boost or they need to be inhibited. Some of your blood vessels are calcifying right now. In fact, most of them have some spots of calcification in them. They can break off and cause a heart attack or a stroke. If we can control crystal growth in our blood vessels, we've helped a cardiovascular disease. Kidney stones are crystals growing in your kidneys. Painful, hurts like hell, and we got to stop that. Can we use proteins, for example, to control, limit at least, kidney stones, vascular calcification? So there's many examples where crystals are important. So let's get on with the movie. I hope there's some sound coming to you. Okay, so I do have it in the AVI file. Let's try that. It's not running there. See if it runs here.
In every moment of every day they come from planets belonging to stars whose dying light is too far away to be seen. From infinity they come. Meteors. Another strange calling card from the limitless reaches of space. Its substance unknown, its secrets unexplored. The meteor lies dormant in the night, waiting.
What makes it multiply? What starts it?
You've got to remember, David, when this hit our atmosphere, it burned at such a fantastic temperature that its metal-bearing compounds could have been altered, left ready to activate, to grow. No telling what went on inside of it. It's been gathering the secrets of time and space for billions of years.
Billions of years. And how long have we got to unlock its most important secret? 3 hours or 3 minutes.
Accessible. But what made it grow? What happened to it?
It slipped into the sink, that's all.
No, something started. It's something we did.
You poured coffee in the sink.
Coffee?
Coffee. Coffee is nothing but flavored water.
Again and again. Water. A simple thing like...
Professor. The meteor.
This is a clue for the quiz. Look at these piles of stuff right there. And obviously you have water. I want somebody after water coming down. Will somebody tell me how they start?
This all water is stopping them.
Right in their tracks.
They are. It's like us as scientists. All right, so they had water, which was supposed to make them grow. So what were the... What gives? What were those piles of stuff? Salt, yes. So what they did, we use proteins. What they did, somehow they found out salt stopped them, like proteins. They got some dump trucks, they dumped some piles of salt. There was a dam up in the valley, they broke down the dam, and they let the water rush over the salt onto the crystals, and like proteins, the salt absorbed onto the crystals, apparently, and stopped them from growing. All right? So we do something similar, but we do it with proteins. So let me end with just a flavoring of what your bodies have to do that. To stop those crystals from going crazy, like Locke's wife, okay? So we have on our chromosome, on your human chromosome 4, forget all the details, we have a family of proteins that by evolution has been designed to handle calcium, to bind calcium. And guess what? You have the same proteins in your milk, in breast milk, in cow's milk, but also in human saliva. So think about milk, right? Milk has to bind lots of calcium and deliver it to the suckling infant. Saliva should have a lot of calcium in it. It's bathing our teeth, right? If we dissolve our teeth, we're sipping on Cokes, as teenagers tend to do, at pH 2. We're dissolving our teeth, but our saliva has calcium in it, bound to these proteins, that allows to remineralize, thank God, the surface of our teeth. So many places that we have to process calcium, saliva, milk, and bones, and teeth, use the same proteins are found in the milk, in the mother's milk, in saliva, to control and handle calcium or crystal growth or something to do with calcium, okay? And there are some of the proteins that we now know, and they have names, and we know where they are, and we're starting to figure out what mutations in the genes that make these proteins give what diseases, okay? And so here's a few. I'll end with a couple diseases in case you wanted to know about the abnormal situation. So like anything that goes wrong, size, shape, number, orientation of the crystals, can give you brief little bones and teeth. And skin, well not skin, is a non-crystal situation. These are the names of the diseases. Okay. So any mutations in some of those proteins that regulate, right? Some of these proteins, if their genes have mutations, you might have a mineralization problem. And if you have too little mineralization, we call it osteomalacia or rickets, the bowing of bones. In children, their bones are soft. They don't have enough of those calcium crystals. There's a problem with the mineral regulation. So normal bone looks like this. If you've got a problem with your bone proteins, look what you've got there. The black is the crystals, by the way, billions of crystals. These patients have lots of bone. All the blue is the collagen. And the cells, you can tell, osteocytes, hopefully you could tell me what these cells are. This is all normal, except it didn't fill with cement. It didn't fill with those billions of crystals. And there's problems in the genes that regulate crystal growth. And these are called osteomalacias. And we know if the genes have mutations in some of them, and I won't go into the details, I'm out of time, but you get soft bones and soft teeth. This is one disease called X-linked hypophosphatemia. It has a problem in an enzyme. Here's another disease called hypophosphatasia, human disease, that have another mutation, another enzyme that processes those mineral binding proteins. And very serious in the infantile state. Half the kids die from this. And I won't say who because I'm involved in it, but there's a Montreal biotech company that's in clinical trials with young children coming from Ireland to Winnipeg, etc., Montreal based, I'm working with them to target an enzyme, real good working enzyme, to the bones of these young children, and they're doing great, by the way. We can talk about that later if you want. And then I just wanted to show you, don't forget, there's bones and teeth, but there are the soft tissues that can mineralize. If we can develop treatments to control crystal growth, like they did in the movie, the dams and the salt, we can maybe decrease the severity of kidney stones. There's a coronary artery with black calcium in it. Yeah, they're calcifying. One of the late-stage features of cardiovascular disease. Plaque, tartar on your teeth, calculus, plaque, but mineralizing plaque, calculus. Skin ulcers, calciphylaxis of the skin, the crystals rupture right out of this patient's shoulder if we can treat those crystals. Okay, I think I'll skip that. We're just using mice. We can actually mineralize the skin of mice. I know this sounds horrible, but we do use mice as an animal model, and we can use gene manipulation in a mouse. We can put proteins in the skin of a mouse that shouldn't be there that can start the skin to mineralize of a mouse. So this is the tail vertebrae in the tail of a mouse. This yellow stuff is mineralizing skin that shouldn't be mineralizing because we've put one of those proteins in there using transgenetics in mice. And we can knock out a gene in a mouse. We can take away, a mouse is a perfectly normal mouse, but we take away one of its proteins. We delete one of its genes. It's called a knockout mouse. And these are examples from one of these mice with a particular protein. You don't know the need to know which one. Its heart starts calcifying. starts mineralizing. And what that's telling us is that that protein is circulating in the body of these mice and in you and me. And if you don't have it, or if it's defective in some way, it is an inhibitor of your soft tissues from mineralizing. It stops normally your testicles from mineralizing. If you take it away, your testicles mineralize. So we have proof in animal models that proteins can actually prevent crystals from growing. So I think I'll just end there. We're doing computational simulations. You see these? We're trying to understand which atoms of a protein actually bind with which atoms of a crystal. And we're doing super computational simulations of that. And we know a bit now. Okay, that's work going on in my lab. I just want to end with a few of that. And we know the structure. These are the crystals and these are the proteins. And we're really starting to understand the atoms that are involved in this inhibition mechanism. So in summary, what have I told you today to wrap it up? I've told you cells of connective tissues. I've told you what extracellular matrix is, mostly collagen. I've talked about the mineral. I've talked about architecture, Charcot-Cartier bridge type things. I've talked about bone remodeling. I've talked about proteins and atoms that can control crystals growing. I've shown you a movie without popcorn. I've shown you what diseases look like, a few of them. And at the very end, quickly, I've showed you that there are some animal models, and also we use cells in culture in a petri dish, not just animal models. Whenever possible, we start with the petri dish and we try and get as much information as we can there. And then we go into an animal model to test our hypotheses. And then, if that works in the animal model, the drug regulatory agencies make us go into a bigger animal model, let's say like a pig. And then if that all works there, then maybe we can bring something to us as humans. So thank you, Bruce, and thank you very much for your attention. I think we have about 10-15 minutes for questions. All this data was just piled together. It's not just from me. It's from wonderful scientists, students, and patients who have consented to give biopsies and tissues for a number of reasons. The funding agencies, of course, in Canada and elsewhere, and NGOs that help fund some of this work, the drug companies that really try and get things to the patients, and to my family, one of my sons who really appreciates what I do. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I want everybody to know that I'm not a physician. I'm a cell biology
Yes, please. Can osteoporosis be reversed by supplements? No. No. Osteoporosis is a cellular event. Okay? It's not really a crystal event. The osteomalacias are problems with the crystals. Osteoporosis is a problem with cell activity, right? Not enough bone forming activity or too much resorptive activity. Alright, so you need these drugs to slow down the resorption or to build more bone, to slow down the aging, the accelerated aging process that you have in osteoporosis. You need to target the cells, not the crystals. It's not a crystal disease. It's a cell activity disease. And for that you need drugs. The nutrients, you just, like always, you just need your basic calcium and phosphate because bone turnover is happening all the time. You just eat well and take vitamins or whatever, and you'll have enough calcium and phosphate. That won't change the cell activity. The drugs can modulate the cell activity. Yes?
Did you say
I will repeat the question. Okay. So the question was, could I say a word about chondrocalcinosis? So chondro means cartilage. Calcinosis means